Somebody speak.
Oh, hi.
This is Justin, and no, that's not Tony doing an Ian impression. It's actually Ian, Mr. Gray, and Mr. Harry Potter himself. T-Bone is here. He's our technology searching person at the moment, digging through some technology articles to find some interesting things. Say hi, Tony.
Hi.
So, God, how am I going to do an hour of this? All right, no. So, Mr. Grain, what's new in your world? You have found a source to replace your UPS batteries.
Indeed. Having used UPSs for many years, generally APC brand, the batteries only last 2 to 3 years. So every so often you'll hear that beeping noise going off constantly, and it's like, okay, time for a new battery. Or should I say battery?
And then you end up throwing them away, right? You know, you
see recycle them.
Is that how you found this UPS? Is somebody threw it away and you
the
just
actual UPS was one that somebody had dumped in a trash can, and I said, why have we dumped it in the trash can? And he said, because it doesn't work anymore. And I said, okay, I'll take it home and refurbish and recycle it rather than just throw it in landfill.
Right.
Because it has a lead acid battery in it. Well, in fact, it has two 12 volt APC, whatever size batteries, and you can't just go throwing those in landfill.
So what is your thought process? And you've heard the podcast about the projector bulb scenario. What's your thought on that? It's going to, because it's happening overseas in UK allegedly right now.
And I'm not surprised. I mean, that's the way the world is going when it comes to bulbs of all sorts. They're going to replace all our streetlights with LEDs in the coming, this next 12 months, because the other ones burn out quick. They have gas in them, they have mercury in them, whatever. But so it's all LED now.
So do you think that's something? So here's my brain, and this is probably a billion-dollar business idea that somebody's going to get. But my brain says that somebody needs to make a universal housing that's fits, because here's the thing. Your lamp housing, you can pull the bulb out of your lamp housing,
yes.
Right? So somebody needs to make an adapter for that housing that converts it to LED. The problem with that, or the dilemma with that, is the incandescent bulb uses way more voltage and requires way more voltage than what a standard LED requires. So you'd have to have a ballast of some sort, I guess, to make that work.
I would probably say it's not the voltage, it's the amperage.
Amperage, okay.
Which is not a factor, because if the projector is designed to provide X number of amps and an LED substitute device uses 1/10 or whatever
right.
of that amperage, then it's going to use 1/10 of the power, the wattage.
So it doesn't matter.
Because volts.
So why wouldn't somebody do that?
Is watts. Well, because then you're looking at, is it going to be one size fits all? Because...
Well, no, what I mean though is when I take, if I open a projector up and I slide that housing out, I can slide the physical bulb out of that housing. What makes those bulbs so darn expensive is typically when you buy a bulb, you're buying the housing as well. You're not just buying the bulb.
Right. Well, I don't
know.
So
the bulb's probably very similar in size, I would think. I mean, I don't know. I'm just speculating.
I'm trying to think. I've got a cheap Mitsubishi
right.
projector. When I bought it, it came with a spare bulb, which is still in the box somewhere in the attic. Because
so
I,
you haven't changed your
bulb. I haven't had to change it, but then I haven't had to used it that much. But
right.
From what I recall, it's that box is probably a 4-inch cube with some kind of styrofoam inside, so the bulb's going to be smaller than that. But the whole thing is that projector was designed by somebody with CAD on their computer, and they had all the...
That's where the housing comes in,
All the physical aspects, because optics is a complicated business, and projecting a uniform light source through various lenses is going to be a very physics-based thing where you're going to draw pictures with different lenses.
So it's probably falls into what my dad used to call more trouble than it's worth category.
Yeah, so a bulb a bulb is going to produce that, you hope, that uniform light source in one location.
Right.
Whereas LED, they tend to be bigger, flatter, whatever looking things based on the size, and so they have to be focused down to a more uniform light source.
Right, because of the way it disperses it.
It would solve my problem, probably. No, it wouldn't. Sorry, I was just digressing. I was thinking my projector's so old it has that rainbow effect if you care to.
Oh no, that's a DLP wheel issue.
That's
the wheel. That has a mechanical wheel that spins incredibly fast.
Yep.
And because it's being told to make whatever colors it's being told to make, and then as that particular projector ages and that gear slows down a little bit and you start to see the rainbow effect, especially on like if you're playing video games, you'll see it on faster moving objects more than you'll see it. And
yes, I've only ever noticed it probably a couple of times. I don't think I'm super susceptible to it, but it's usually on the end credits where you got white text scrolling up a black screen. That's about the only time, and that's only if you flick your eyes left and right. And
that was a common, that's why LCOS existed. So LCOS was a hybrid of DLP and liquid crystal display, and they created this thing to kind of get rid of the rainbow wheel thing, where they were creating colors with chips instead of creating colors with mechanical movement of particular parts. DLP Labs, there's still projectors out there to this day that still use DLP stuff, very much so. But what that particular style of projector created was that ink blot level black color that everybody craved so much, which was incredibly hard to do with projection, as we covered in our last thing. For the all two people that listen to it, the home theater series hasn't really taken off as much as what's weird is it people have asked for it, and then we did it, or we started doing it, and they seem to be our lowest T-bone ranking cast, so to speak. The microphone stand is having performance anxiety. But anyway, that's pretty interesting. I did see some interesting news, Tony, now that you're up, that Apple is having issues. Apparently, Apple is having a spat with Dolby and music artists because they haven't come up with a standard for this new spatial audio project that's in development. And
the spatial audio that doesn't make sense.
Right. So, but what the problem with it is it's not agreeing with the recording studios and Pro Tools. Like, Pro Tools doesn't have a...
Well, because Pro Tools is a stereo left-right recording platform.
Right. So then I went down the rabbit hole, and Shure and Sennheiser have now both started developing programs to take those two channels, drop it in the hole, and create spatial audio, which, to your point, is stupid to begin with, because all it is remixing... Like what Yamaha used to do on their AV receivers. It's just remixing the format. You're not actually doing actual atmospheric formats. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Why listening to music in my car do I need to feel like a drum?
It's not for cars. It's to try to get people to listen to music in their home and music videos in their home. The music industry is dying. Like, it's just the business model is dead. The streaming model is dead. Nobody's making money at it. So they're trying to desperately come up with a new gimmick so people will make money.
Okay. Well, mini disc didn't stick around either.
Oh, well, okay. But anyway, and it's not coming back. So that's the thing about it is it's an interesting dynamic between streaming and the way it's recording. So apparently there's this big hullabaloo with Apple right now that they're in an argument with Dolby and Dolby Atmos. And then now music producers, which who creates the music to begin with, the big form factor is the music producers are upset about this stuff because one, it's, they have to go buy new software for it, or they have to come up with something different, a different plugin for their software to make it work. But number two, Apple is trying to entice them by paying them more. They're saying, hey, Taylor Swift, if you come out with an atmospheric track along with a two-channel track, we're going to pay you more. And that's why producers are in a frenzy. But now Dolby Atmos has weighed in because the producers don't want to pay licensing to Dolby because Dolby always wants money for their software and their licensing. So yeah, no, it's kind of interesting.
But the fact that they've got to buy more different software and all of that, getting paid more by Apple is just going to balance out because of all of the extra stuff that they had to buy now.
Right. Well, yeah, no, correct. I mean, right now,
so they're not really getting paid more. It's just a disguise.
It's like people working at a drive-thru getting a $20 an hour raise. It's not like you're making more. You're just going to get taxed more because of where you live, if you hadn't heard that. But anyway, yeah, I thought it was interesting on that. I just saw something pop up about it that they're arguing. Surprised they're arguing about all the things. So. But anyway, thought that was interesting.
I think the music market, if that's what we can call it,
right,
is actually probably getting saturated now anyway. There are so many artists out there. I mean, yes, I'm old. I don't know all the current ones are, but there's not many new ones that I know coming up.
Well, it's, you got to remember, you can't make a living at it anymore, you know, and that's the thing. You know, there's a few that made it through that pop. Like if you look at Post Malone and people like Post Malone who organically created themselves on YouTube, you know, he was discovered on YouTube and then he just blew out of the stratosphere and now is one of the biggest guys out there, you know. He kind of made it past that bridge, but I agree with you. I think there's only so much you can put out there and market.
I think that's because the latest trend in whoever's the latest pop idol is like, it's like fashion. It's like it changes. I don't listen to much new stuff because
right,
I'm not a fashion follower, trend follower.
Right.
I listen to The Eagle. It plays 70s rock all day.
Yeah, no, I love that radio station.
So
I think it's awesome.
You know, the quality of that kind of sound is still around. I mean, hell, the Stones are playing Toyota Center next month, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. No, and the Stones actually released a new hit single.
Yeah.
Which wasn't bad. Which actually it wasn't actually... I was like, okay, I see that. You know,
It seems to be quite a lot of retro stuff. I mean, there was Pete Townsend was on Jimmy Fallon the other night. They were publicizing Tommy the Musical, but he was actually there and played the guitar and sang with them all, and it was cool.
So I have a theory behind this. I know, shocker, but I watched an interview with Kirk Hammett a while back. He's the guitarist for Metallica, the lead guitarist for Metallica. And has been forever, and the original forever. Somebody had asked him why the resurgence of what's going on. You know what? Why he thought, and he said, "Well, that's because there's not very many guitar heroes left. You know, Eddie Van Halen's dead. You know, the people he's getting older. You know, people like Joe Satriani, you know, guys like that that are really heavy guitarists. You know, most of those bands that came out of the 90s are dead. You know, that's why it was so depressing to do Wine and Vinyl 90s, you know, because it's just like, after about 2 hours of it, you know, I look over at Tony and I'm like, holy hell, this is depressing. Like, there's not one lineup that can put the original. I think, did we calculate it? I think it was like, what, five bands?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
That could put the original lineup together because they've all lost band members, like significant band members. You know, not that any band member is not significant, but significant band members that change the sound, meaning lead singer or lead guitarist slash singer or whatever. You know, when your band loses a lead singer, it's catastrophic. You know, you can't create, you know, some bands have tried, like Alice in Chains have tried and Stone Temple Pilots tried with several different, in fact, I think Stone Temple Pilots is, who are they using as their singer, Tony? Because aren't they coming to the Woodlands soon? I don't know who they're using as a singer, because Scott Weiland's dead, you know, everybody, but pretty much Pearl Jam.
Queen.
Well, no, Queen's singer, they have a new singer, but he's not bad.
That's what I was trying to say. Gutt. Queen, from, I think.
Who's he from? I have no idea. Interesting. Queen
reinvented themselves a couple of times. I can't remember.
When Freddie Mercury passed, yeah.
I can't remember the guy in between, but when Adam Lambert came along and they're touring with him, and I'll go to a concert.
And Adam Lambert was from The Voice, right? Or was he from American Idol? Yeah, he was one of the two where he came on board. Journey's another one that came up with a younger, way younger lead singer than the lead singer that they got in a fight with, but
It's going to be okay until Brian May or Roger Taylor croak.
When Brian May's gone, I mean, Roger Taylor's amazing too, but it was kind of like when Geddy Lee, when they lost Neil Peart. You know, Neil Peart was one of the few drummers. It would have been like Van Halen losing Alex Van Halen. You know, yeah. Neil Peart was such a giant albatross for that band that they just said, you know, we're not going to carry on without Neil. You know, we're just not going to do it. Geddy Lee just decided that his heart wasn't in it, you know, when his buddy died, you know, and some bands go that way. Most bands have gone that way. I know Nirvana went that way, you know, until Dave Grohl came out with the Foo Fighters with he and Taylor Hawkins, and actually another former Nirvana member that fattened the sound up for Nirvana when they were playing there. I think Pete Wentz is his name. That was the guy that Nirvana decided that we sound too thin as a threesome on stage, as a three-part group on stage. We need another guitarist to fatten the sound up. And so that's when they brought him in. And then he's on the Foo Fighters. He plays for the Foo Fighters now. So it's kind of interesting. But the 90s was a very... So that's why a lot of the 80s and 70s bands are kind of resurging themselves, because there's not any bands from the 90s left, really. No. You know, and most of the bands that you...
Well, wasn't that like New Age and...
Alternative.
Sparks and Alternative. And
there was a lot of Alternative there. STP, Stone Temple Pilots, was a huge force in the 90s. Scott Weiland died tragically. You know, he was kicked out of two bands before he died. He was kicked out of Velvet Revolver, which was basically Guns N' Roses reinvented, which is a freaking amazing band. And then Stone Temple Pilots, and then went and created his own band called The Wild Abouts. And that's when he passed away. It was when he started his own private label. So, or his private band, and then he died on a bender again, drug overdose. So yeah, it was a very tragic year for 90s music. You know, it just, you know, so I have a feeling that's why you're not seeing a lot now. But there are some out of the 2000s, like Coldplay came back, Limp Bizkit came back, you know, they're doing tour again. And then, you know, but most of those bands that people associate with the 90s actually didn't come out until the 2000s. You know, Creed wasn't out until the 2000s and a few of the others.
I guess I'm grounded in the 70s and 80s. I went to see whoever it was. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, I wouldn't call that.
Right.
Whatever, last year.
Right.
This year, I'm going to see the Electric Light Orchestra.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, which in whichever version it is now, it's obviously not going to be the same as it was back when I listened to it, but I'm hoping they're going to play all the same old songs.
So were you really big into, like, Van Halen at all?
Not really.
Not really? I was going to say, because they're coming on... whatever you call this, coming on a reunion tour
yeah.
with Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony, who was the original bassist for Van Halen. And then, of course, Alex Van Halen refuses to play with anybody else but his brother. He's still kind of, he's been a hermit since his brother passed away. And then, of course, Eddie Van Halen part will be filled in by Joe Satriani, which you want to talk about huge shoes to fill. That would be those shoes. But Joe Satriani is an amazing guitarist, always has been. In fact, trained several guitarists along the way, including Steve Vai and Eric Johnson, who are also incredibly large independent guitarists and facilitated a lot of those people's careers. And but yeah, so he's filling in for Eddie Van Halen because he has to. So they'll be at the Pavilion. The problem is the concert tickets are so freaking expensive.
Yes.
Yeah, like I looked at the to get a decent seat, it was like $1,200 a ticket. You know, I mean, it was absolutely nuts to get to sit toward the front. You know, as a guitarist, that's where I would want to sit because I want to just watch the hands of the guitarist.
To something big like that, it has to be a major event in association with, say, a vacation or a, like, Queen were playing Madison Square Garden this year, and I was thinking that would be a good trip.
Yeah, you know, that would be fun.
Week in New York, go and see that, but of course tickets were just like way, way off the charts. So
a friend of mine he was trying to see them in the Woodland, not Queen. They were seeing the Hagar tour in the Woodland. I think it's called the Best of All Worlds tour or whatever. He's gonna be in New York for business, so he's just gonna stay an extra day and catch the show. And I think Queen is around the same time as that, so he may see both, so who knows. But there's a lot of bands from the 70s. I think Aerosmith is gonna be done for a while. I think Steven Tyler has had some major health issues with his voice, and I think Bon Jovi is on the same path. I think Bon Jovi's completely done. I think John Bon Jovi suffered a vocal cord problem and then had a surgery.
These people are all old, like me.
You can't do 100 shows a year, 4 hours a pop anymore, you know? It's especially if you... And he's a smoker. You know, John Bon Jovi is a known smoker, and that totally destroys your vocal cords as a vocalist, you know, or trying to sing. Unless you want a raspy voice when you're singing, then, you know, go for it. Now, some vocalists do that to get the rasp. So... And I know Def Leppard's still remaining on tour. They're still touring about with Motley Crue. Motley Crue's actually stepping away because Vince Neil's not in the best of health. Poison's supposed to be coming back online. And then Skid Row, for the sixth time, has now lost another lead singer. I saw that this morning. That they lost their lead singer, not because of stupid prima donna ego crap. It's more of their lead singer is actually battling cancer, so he's got to take off because he's struggling with chemo and all that. So don't know who's filling in, even though Sebastian Bach has been available since 1996. You could just use the original singer and make a whole heck of a lot of money going on tour, but you know, nobody wants, they can't be in the same room together. So, but anyway, and then I know the Eagles, didn't they just come and go? The Eagles, I think, just came in.
They were here recently.
They were indeed.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see them
all. Are any of the original band members still in the Eagles, or is it like the Sons of the Eagles? Eagles and family. Eagle AI, there you go. You'll find this interesting on that tour, the Hagar tour. John Bonham's son, I can't remember, maybe it is John Bonham, the Bonham from Led Zeppelin. His son is who's playing the drums for this Hagar thing on.
excuse me, we mentioned Queen, Roger Taylor, etc. earlier. His son goes around when they're touring and actually plays the drums a lot.
Does he? How's Brian?
Old and
How old is Brian May? Because he looks like, one, he looks like he doesn't age, and number two, he's still a phenomenal guitarist. Oh, yeah.
He's in his 70s.
He's still very much rock. Like, he could plays better than I ever could. Jason Bonham is who I'm thinking of. He's going to be the one. That's John Bonham's son. Yeah, he's going to be the one filling in for Alex Van Halen, because Alex says he's not coming out of his, you know, hermit crab house, but, you know, rightly so. I mean, that's that brotherly bond when you're playing music like that is very, you know, they played together since they were children. So it's like, I can understand him not wanting to, you know, darken the doorway of his brother's catalog, you know what I mean? Without his brother being there, it's probably a lot of fresh wounds there still. So, but anyway, but yeah, no, I think on the music side of things, there's just not a lot of interesting. So here's, Tony and I were actually talking about this earlier. The only growing genre in the music industry right now is country. That's the only place where you're starting to see some kind of movement, and whether it's a bowel movement or not, I don't know. It's up to the person listening to it. The only movement you're seeing is within country music, where you're seeing this country rap thing that's popping up now, and there's
that'd be C rap.
We'd call it crap, but yeah, C rap. Yeah, exactly. So you're seeing a lot of that move on.
Also got
Jelly Roll is one of those things that's really bizarre to me, because he breaks the mold of whatever. I like him. I think he's cool. I think he's a cool human being. I think he does a lot of cool things for charity and kids and stuff like that. And his music isn't half bad. You know, his music's not too bad either. So, but if you like that sort of thing, he kind of falls into the Post Malone cat. In fact, Post Malone has kind of moved into country now. You know, Beyonce tried and was burst into flames because she tried to cross into the country world, and her album was not accepted as much. It just wasn't.
Well, country already has their own queen. She's called Reba.
Reba McEntire. And yeah, cheers to that, because that's who belongs there. You know, if you watch The Voice too, she's on there and she's amazing. She still sounds amazing. Like, she's still, and Dolly Parton still sounds good too. But yeah, no. So the only really growing genre in music right now is country at the moment. You know, rock music is kind of just, there's not a lot of up and coming people that are doing much in it.
Even the latest Nickelback album, and I like Nickelback, even that has a country vibe to some of the songs.
Yeah, no, I think that's a lot of, they're trying to get on what we call cross platform. You know, Taylor Swift did it. Taylor Swift started in country before she moved to really exclusively pop at the moment. You know, there's a lot of, Nelly is a famous rapper from the 90s. He's like nothing but, I think he moved into country. The former singer Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish is country, and he sounds great. He did a really good job. Aaron Lewis from Stained. Stained is a former alternative band out of the 90s 2000 era that was actually coexisted with Limp Bizkit for a hot minute. He's country, exclusively country at the moment. So yeah, there's a lot of, and actually Stained is supposed to be working on new material, is what he had announced, because of some of the traction that they got on their new album. So, but yeah, Spotify raising their prices yet for a third time this year. I found that to be interesting. I saw that this morning. Tidal has lowered their prices and given you more content and higher bandwidth content. So they're now jumping into the 192 kilohertz realm of content on streaming
stuff.
Okay,
so how does that translate to, like, I use Amazon Music,
mm-hmm.
partly because I have access to their full catalog,
right.
through friends and family membership. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the songs, they say HD or Ultra HD, like it's a movie, but it's not. It's a song, so it's in right. some kind of high def audio. Is that
yeah, so typical songs are recorded for the most part, and they can be recorded up to 244 kilohertz, which is top highest bandwidth you can get. Most streaming devices can only handle up to 192 kilohertz of streaming quality. Most streaming services only provide up to 44.1 up until Tidal just moved into this. You'll have to look up Amazon. I'm not sure on Amazon and how they're on how their HD format works, but yes, that would be it. If it's just standard, then it would be either 16 to 32 kilohertz, kilobits, right. 16, sorry, I said kilohertz, kilobits. If it's HD, it can fall between 32 to 44.1. And then if it's above the HD, then it goes into 192 up to 244. So it just depends on what that particular music service is streaming in and what your device can play. Like a Weem Pro, for instance, can play higher bit rate than your Sonos device can, believe it or not, even though the Sonos is more expensive. The Sonos is working on that, but they kind of cap out up to 44 at the moment, and that's a strain for most of the Sonos devices.
So Amazon's ultra high definition is 24-bit 192.
Okay, so 24-bit 192 kilohertz, right.
And their high definition is equal to Apple lossless.
Which is what, 244? Of course they don't. They're Apple. They don't want to.
It just says CD quality.
Most CD quality stuff was 16-bit. So even if it's 44.1, it'll still be 16-bit. If it's 192, it'll go into 24-bit, but you can have 192 at 24-bit or even 16-bit. So it really just depends on what they're doing and how they're compressing it and what your player can do and what that a music service will allow. So now Tidal has moved into 24-bit 192, and they've lowered their price point on their streaming service. So that's kind of interesting. Meaning they're more in competition with Apple Music. Apple Music seems to be the dominant force behind most of this, mainly because a lot of folks have iPhones in comparison to Android. For those that are Android, I know Spotify is heavily used in the fitness community and people that are music dependent community and have been dependent there because of price point. Spotify has always typically been the cheaper on the price point spectrum, but not known for quality. Spotify, you typically have a lot of mid-range and bass loss on quality. So again, that's why people pushed into Apple. The problem with Apple is people with an S4, like our pirate friend over here, can't get into Apple Music. They can't download Apple Music on a device that's not Apple. So that's the other weird thing about Apple. And it really doesn't really have to do with Apple. It has to do with Apple's security protocols that do not coexist on Google or Droid devices, because they have a higher security protocol than the Droid device typically does. So they want you have to meet checks and balances before you can put an Apple thing on a Droid or Google device.
Apple isn't the Droid you're looking for.
It's not the droid you're looking for. No, yes, Obi-Wan, it's not the droid you're looking for. For Mr. Grain, who can do the best Obi-Wan impression because he's British. So, oh, you can get Apple Music on Android now. So you can now get Apple Music on Android. When would that become a thing? Oh, has it? I did not know that. All right, so
I think it's become less proprietary across all these things. You know, Amazon Fire TV has all the channels that you could possibly want.
Well, Apple TV Plus has now put their app, which is kind of like a dummy type of Apple TV experience without being able to download other apps, on Sony, Google, or all Samsung, all kinds of TVs, LG, that goes across all platforms. And what that does is if you already have the app on an Apple TV, it will zap those apps within that Apple TV experience. So a couple different waves to surf on that front. But it's not an Apple TV. It's not the same thing as Apple TV.
No, it seems the whole business model changed somewhere along the line.
It doesn't work is the problem.
No, what I mean is it used to be you would sign up for various channels, whatever they may be, and then yes, you could access them through various streaming devices, but now it's like, well, you can sign up to these channels through our platform.
Right.
So it's like everybody makes a little bit of money somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
Because Amazon, you want BritBox, you get it through Amazon. You want Stars, you get it through Amazon. So they're taking a cut. But
so I think Apple lowered their prices for a hot minute for the music streaming services to try to get people to adopt, you know, to come on board with it. Tidal has now lowered, they're the lowest now. So Tidal gives you the family share plan, their Ultra HD MQA, what they call the audiophile service, for $16 a month now, which is cheaper than Spotify's at one point, $19. I don't know what their plan is now. Now that they're talking, they're raising their prices for the third time, I'm not sure. But that's the third time this year. There is speculation that because they brought on Joe Rogan, that's why they're raising their prices, because Joe Rogan requires a lot of money to have his service on board the Spotify thing. But it's just there's a lot of and then there's also there Spotify's actually laid off people too. They just went through a recent round of layoffs with that. So again, the business model doesn't work. It doesn't work for the artists, more importantly, and it or the people that are creating the music, it doesn't work at all. So it's kind of a hard wave to navigate. I don't know where the shakedown on the TV streaming thing's going to work. I just, you know, your cable service providers are encouraging people to now stream instead of doing boxes, rightly so, but that just means they're just going to raise the price of the TV service as more people are doing it because they're not going to get the box rental fee anymore. You know, so there's just, I don't know. It's kind of weird that we're kind of all waiting for the,
it's going to be another dot-com bubble somewhere down
streaming,
the line.
Exactly, as I was going to say, streaming bubble to burst, so to speak. But Apple TV is working on a few different things on the back burner, but, faster Apple TVs and faster stream boxes, we're more data. Tony and I kind of jumped into that with our very first podcast episode, that disc versus streaming. You know, that was my crystal ball thing, was that, you know, in order to get better quality on audio and video, you're going to have to build a faster box, you know, with a bigger hard drive. You know, you're going to have to go more toward a hybrid of downloading and streaming, not necessarily just streaming, you know. So, but that'll be interesting.
And it'll all go the same way as all technology these days, where it will be obsolete in
no matter what you do, it's the wrong thing
because it won't support the next version of the whatever OS they want to put on it.
Yep. So you had a question about TVs earlier.
I did. I was looking at some promotional email that came across from some Woot Amazon subsidiary,
yep,
something with lots of different Samsung TVs, and they're like all listed at half price. Some of them are probably refurbished. I don't know. I didn't check into the details. But what's the best kind
of
TV?
What's the best TV?
So say I want to replace that $40 75-inch TV that I've got.
Well, you're not going to be more expensive than $40, yeah. So let's just start there. Okay. So this is actually an awesome podcast because this is exactly how I would handle this if somebody asked me at the counter, which you're coincidentally sitting at the counter, about what the best TV to be you would buy. It depends on what your application is. Because if you're a gamer, then I would say go this way. If you're not a gamer, then I would say go this way. Knowing you and knowing what your watching habits, you're probably after more longevity than performance. So OLED technology is the picture that everybody's trying to mimic and keep up with. And because it's set the standard for the best picture of all time. However, what they have discovered is that the longevity of OLED is very much like the longevity of some of our older formats, not plasma because they seem to never die, but LCD and things like that, is they tend to burn out or start to fade quicker over the years. The leading brand behind this particular technology would be Sony. However, Sony isn't manufacturing their own OLED panels. Sony's OLED panels are actually manufactured by LG and Samsung. Sony's best OLED panel is actually manufactured by Samsung. Their cheapest OLED that they sell is actually manufactured by LG. So, yes, and that's the same LG for the listeners that the new G4 that everybody's pre-ordering is made off of. They did not do anything to enhance the panel except some hokey pokey stuff that to make it a little brighter. But if you're looking for longevity, which most people are when they do major purchases like this, I would say the mini LED or the QLED or the standard LED panel last longer than the OLED. If you're looking for the OLED type of picture quality, then mini LED is the best color saturation with the OLED-like fit and finish, but a longer lifespan than your typical OLED panel. Now, I haven't seen an OLED panel on the Sony side burn out as of yet. That's why the Sonys are more expensive. The OLED panels from the Sony is using image rejuvenation and refreshing and things like that to keep static imaging from happening and several other things from happening across the way to create longevity in their OLED panels, even though they're using LG technology, because that's one of the big things that people online poo-poo on when they're talking about the OLED panels, is that, oh, well, they're all made by LG and they're all made by this and they're all made by that to begin with. So you may as well buy an LG panel. That's why everybody craps on the Sony panel. Not so. Sony's actually doing things in the background with their processing technology and refresh technology that adds longevity to their panel in comparison to LG and Samsung. Now, the Sony OLED panel that we have sitting on the wall over here has been here since 2018, 2017, and it's left on all day long, 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it still works, still looks good, still looks great. Now, we do have noticed that in this past year that the brightness has started to suffer just a little bit in comparison to our mini LED friend over here. But if you want the best format technology, I would say OLED is the best format. But if you're looking for longevity, but just as good, if not better, as far as picture depth, I would say the mini LED is the way to go.
What is QLED when it comes to...
So QLED, it's a great question. So QLED is a hybrid technology of... QLED is a hybrid technology of the brightness of OLED, but while using mini LED, the mini LED technology, they called it, they nicknamed it QLED because they cannot use the word OLED because it's not a traditional OLED. So they called it QLED because it sounds like OLED and, well, it's supposed to be just as good type of thing. So QLED is an awesome format. There are certain Samsungs that I would not buy. I do not like the 7000 series and 8000 series Samsung because unless they fall into the QLED territory or mini LED territory, but they're phenomenal TVs and they tend to last a long time.
So I'm just found this email that I was talking about.
Sure.
There's the frame.
I have a love-hate relationship with the frame. Interior designers love them, and I hate to mount them because you have to cut in giant back boxes that go behind them because the frame, you see that top box right there on this rack over there, Ian?
Yeah.
Not the Macintosh, but below the Macintosh.
Yeah.
Well, that's the power supply and video board for the frame.
Okay.
So it's like mounting a DVD player in your wall.
Okay.
And the reason why is because they wanted to hug the thing close to the wall as much as possible. So they have this giant box thing that has to be external from the TV itself. I thought it was the stupidest idea on the planet when I first saw it. Because why would you pay more for a TV that looks better turned off than turned on? But now that they've moved into the QLED territory of last year and this year's prior, their picture quality is actually amazing. So it's actually really good, but it's still stupid and has the stupid external box, which is called a One Connect box. But it's the reason why you're seeing TVs on things like that become really, 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 really cheap is because we're in what's called a model transition. So this is inventory that are 2023 inventory. They're trying to blow out before 2024 inventory is released, which doesn't usually get released until around July, August. So you're going to see these sales pop up quite a bit, actually.
Right, so a 65-inch OLED Samsung, mm-hmm. 4K S90C Quantum HDR is...
That's an amazing television.
Currently just over $1,400.
Yep. That was about a $2,800 TV, yep. Probably 3 or 4 months ago.
So that's their biggest offering, discounted.
Yep.
Pointless price-wise of 44% off.
So here's some fun news about OLED. A lot of people have speculated that Sony is moving out of OLED. Sony's actually not moving out of OLED. They created the best version of that very Samsung panel and that won top TV of the year award this year and called their Master Edition. That's the A95L. That's an amazing panel. It's almost three-dimensional. It's so deep as far as picture quality. And it's made off that panel. It's made off that very Samsung panel. Samsung just doesn't have the Sony image processing that Sony is using for their current panels. I don't know about longevity of the Samsung panels in comparison to LG because this is a very new category for Samsung. Very new. I mean, paint still wet on the box, new, just came out December, January of this year type of new. So it's very, actually, no, it's poor like, I think it was October. Yeah, October of last year, January of this year.
This
category
is described as a 2023 model.
Yep. Yeah, that's the model
built in.
Everything's going to have that built in. Yeah, no, that is a phenomenal TV. If you like the Samsung color palette, then I would still pick one of those over the LG To me, LG has had longevity issues and quality control issues, but the LGs have better price points in most all cases there. Well, so
in the description, it says Pantone validated, and Pantone is the sort of international color
right
index, if you like.
Right.
Every color has a three-digit number or
right
whatever.
Yeah, no. Samsung really stepped it up to the plate with that. Looking at local distribution, that price probably isn't much different than what we can get it for in a lot of cases. But because the OLED stuff, let's see, very rarely goes on sale unless it's a modern transition. What were you looking at, the 65?
Yeah, that's the only one they got listed.
What model was it? Was it a QN65S9? Oh, no, that's the new one.
C.
S9, yeah, so that's last year's. Let's see here. Yeah, kind of going into it. Yeah, that's cheaper than what you can get it for through distribution warehousing. Oh, no, that's a C model.
That's the thing. There's so many different model numbers.
That's why Samsung's confusing, because they have so many flipping models. Like, their models are just... like,
well, they probably got the same TV, but it has a different model number for Sam's Club and Costco and Walmart and Best Buy and...
Right, yeah,
so
no.
So that you can't price match, by the way.
Right. No, that's exactly what it is. But yeah, no, that's a really good deal for that panel. That's not a bad deal for that panel at all. I mean, that's cheaper than even dealer or warehouse cost that I'm looking at the moment. So that's a really, really good deal. And again, they may, oh no, there's an OC right there, but that's the 83 inch, which you don't need the 83 inch. Yeah, they may not even have them anymore, because they're gonna, again, you're gonna start seeing these get harder and harder to find because they're just literally blowing them out. So if you're in the market for a TV, now's the time to look for a TV if you're looking for one. But yeah, that would be a good buy for that type of money for sure. But yeah, no, OLED technology is the hot technology that everybody's trying to mimic. Mini LED technology is the new kid on the block that's just as good at OLED, but it's more energy efficient and it lasts longer. And then after that, it's just your standard, what they call direct view or direct light engine, which is right behind all the things there. So yeah, no. So okay. There's several different form factors there.
They do have 75 inches, a penny under $2,000.
Yeah, that's still cheaper. Well, I don't know if I can get... I don't know if we can even pull from those in warehousing anymore.
But you think...
OLED. Wait, the 75... What's the 75-inch? What model is that? Is that a direct light or mini LED? What is that?
It says OLED.
They don't have a 75 OLED. Okay. They only have 77.
All right. QN77S90.
So that's a 77. So that's why the model numbers are stupid. So the size of the TV on a Samsung, if you look, the size of the TV is always the first number listed. So if it's a QN55,
yep,
that's the size of the, yep, TV. And then it goes, and then the series of the TV is the number that's listed after that. And then it goes the CSZV, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
FX,
yeah, that crap. Yeah, but that's why I call them 6 series, 9 series, 95 series, 8 series, 7 series, and then so on.
Yeah, well, I think mine's 6.
Yeah, that would be the...
my old one.
So, yeah, that's still a really good deal. That's still a really good deal on an OLED, for sure. Because most of my distro warehouses have moved out of the 2023 models because they already started blowing them out a while back, and yeah, everybody made a hard run on them.
And all the leftovers end up on this website.
Pretty much. Or Best Buy. Best Buy still has some good deals in there too. They should get you a 98. Why are you going so small?
Because I'm only sat less than 12 feet away from it.
Even more reason to go the 98. Let's see here. S95. Yeah, no. So this website, this distribution warehouse has started pulling stuff out of inventory already. So yeah, no, they're, I would say you're probably not going to find a better deal than what you're seeing there because they all end up in Amazon or Woot.
But we don't know whether this Samsung OLED screen is going to stay the distance.
I don't have any.
And what is the
okay?
What is the O in OLED?
Organic.
And what happens to organic things?
They deteriorate.
Exactly.
Yeah, organic vegetable. So, do you know how OLED technology works?
I haven't looked into it.
Okay, so OLED technology is a paper thin, like this sheet of paper, yep, light filament that runs corner to corner across the screen. And you have a positive and negative charge that goes across that filament, okay? So, because it's not just one sheet, it's several sheets, that's why it is susceptible to what's called static imaging or screen burn and things like that. Now, LG was famous for getting static imaging and screen burns and whatnot, but the reason why I think Sony has moved away from the LG model and they're moving toward the Samsung panels is because the Samsung panels are more hardy. They're just a better made panel. So over a period of time, that filament does lose or does have discoloration and loses its brightness. But again, we have a TV here that's, I would say, used way more than the average bear on 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, all day long, showing 4K video. And we've just now, I think going on year eight, are now seeing signs of it not being bright as the average bear as far as in comparison to our mini LED friends that it's next to. This TV is about as just as old over here, and we've seen no signs of any type of wear and tear or wear out, and it's the mini LED version. So again, mini LED, the reason why Sony is putting their research and development into mini LED is because of, one, you can actually get better color saturation on a mini LED television in comparison to the OLED, and without increasing the gain or the brightness to a point where it creates heat, which causes static imaging. That's why Sony is they're not moving away from OLED. They're just putting a lot of eggs in the mini LED basket, because you got to remember, they sell panels to Hollywood. They sell panels to movie directors and people that buy TVs by the dozens to create movies and content and photography and things like that. They're still the industry authority on color saturation and natural colorization. So short story long, no, I do not know the longevity of an OLED, of a Sony or a Samsung OLED panel. But I do know that the panels that Sony typically manipulates are in that wheelhouse, and that's the parts that they are using is the Samsung base, you know, for that. But I do prefer the Samsung OLEDs over the LG. I've never been a fan of LG. LG's color saturation. Never been a fan of the longevity of their type of product. So I've always been more of a Samsung or Sony guy. So if you want the best picture money can buy, Sony is the way to go for a more natural color palette. But Samsung has a great picture too, you know, so it just depends on what color palette you prefer. But if I was buying a TV or advising somebody to buy a TV and they want a TV that's going to last a long time, I would say QLED or mini LED. If they want to roll dice, then OLED would be the way to go. I have an OLED TV. I have the Sony A95L which is the thing, the TV that won top TV of the year. That's what I have in my living room. And it's astounding. Like, the picture quality is damn near three-dimensional, where it looks like you could reach into the screen at times, even watching older movies and older content. Do not waste your money on 8K. I think 8K is a farce. I think it's a failure launch. It was based on the video game industry, which is doing very well. In fact, it's probably one of the few AV industries that's doing well. It will always probably continue to do well. The problem is there's not enough content and not enough 8K video games driving people to go spend twice as much money on video games or on TVs to make their video games in 8K. There are other form factors that weigh in on that, but there's not any 8K movies. We know that physical media is kind of going the way of the dodo bird. It's not staying, meaning Sony's not going to put a lot of development in 8K physical media, even though they have with PlayStation. This is a quote coming directly from Sony. They are not planning to release or launch any more 8K televisions at the moment because there's no reason to. Meaning there's not a demand for the supply that they already have. So I would say that the Samsung 8K is using very much the same type of 8K that Sony is utilizing. So they're also not pushing people toward 8K. So, and Sony's the people that created the 8K stuff. So it's not that it's being an abandoned platform. It's just, do you need it? You know, and there's a lot of speculation with people that review TVs that if you take older content that isn't utilizing 8K, it can create this ant fuzziness to the image because it's trying to shift pixels that aren't there, meaning you can't make lemonade out of pond water. I mean, you can, but it probably won't taste very good. So I would not, unless it's just really cheap, like the 8K that we have on demo over there. Unless it's a really cheap version of that TV, it's not worth the extra hassle to get it. Unless you're a gamer, unless you have a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Elite or whatever, you're not going to see the value in it. So I would stay away from the 8K stuff as far as money is concerned.
Okay, sounds good.
A lot like drinking from a fire hydrant, that was. Yeah, no. That's the where OLED had its claim to fame is viewing angles. You can literally stand perpendicular to an OLED television and you have no discoloration in the picture, unlike what was known as edge lit a long time ago, or direct view. There's a reason why a lot of folks moved away from edge lit, because edge lit was basically just a string of lights going across the edge, and they were bright lights, so they were casting the light towards the middle, which became a ghostly, milky image. Your 6 series Samsung is an edge lit television. So if you're watching a movie like Batman or Star Wars or a really dark movie, you'll probably notice this ghostly haze if the lights are turned off and you're watching a really dark movie. Or you may not even care. So, you know, that's the thing. Is edge lit is the used to be the key word to get everybody to buy because it was edge LED, but then they found that it wasn't as great as they thought, and then they moved into edge lit direct lit, which is corner to corner and then lights behind it, the panels and stuff. So a lot of fun stuff, but yeah, no OLED, great TV, great technology, nothing wrong with it, phenomenal picture quality, but longevity could be a thing, especially with certain vendors. So, but that's a heck of a deal, though. If you were going to buy an OLED TV in the 65-inch category, $1,400 is an amazing price for an OLED, though. If you want a smaller TV, unless you're going to get the 77. The 77 is probably the way to go as long as your cabinet would fit it.
Well, we had to get rid of the cabinet when we went up from a 43 to this 70.
Oh, you don't have the top anymore.
I don't have the center section. I just have some kind of random buffet thing we bought that matched the bookcases.
Right.
I mean, I could fit a 90-something inch in there. But
well,
I
then all the more reason to.
I would have to move the bookcases away from the centerpiece.
The fact that you
or
can...
Or I could just get rid of all that and hang it on the wall.
Right. True. The fact that you can get a 98-inch TV for peanuts now is just mesmerizing to me.
Well, maybe I'll get one and put in the media room.
No, don't do that. Because you got a 120-inch now, right?
No.
What is it now?
It's 107.
Oh, well, then that wouldn't be too big of a...
Well, don't forget, it's a redneck screen.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was all high-tech. Redneck weighing in on the 98-inch, yeah.
The projector will probably do bigger than 107, but...
Oh, much so. It'll go as big as you want.
I was limited by the materials that I was using to make my own screen.
Oh. Yeah, no, so 98-inch wouldn't be that big of a downplay from what you have now then. It wouldn't be that drastically different. I will tell you this. Everybody thinks because the 98-inch TV has become cheaper that, you know, the projection is dead, and I highly disagree with that theory. It's not dead. In fact, it's very much alive and will be very much alive until we can build what's called micro-LED technology in your room. The reason why is because most elephants don't like going around corners, and they weigh about 300 pounds, and you can't get them in the house. You can't get them upstairs in the media room, past the sharp corners and all the other stuff. So, but it is intriguing, though, and we have seen a downfall of 100-inch screens sales, because by the time you buy a $4,000 projector and a $2,000 screen, you may as well buy a $6,000 98-inch TV. You know, what I'm waiting for is them to make a really good one. You know, so far they've just kind of taken their what I would call mid-range technology and made it larger. And it's something where they haven't, nobody's came out swinging with that, except for Sony, which for some, they discontinued the 100-inch panel because it's all about glass manufacturing. It's all about how big a glass they can get at that time, and that's what pushes the new size of TV models at that point, which is really weird. But yeah, so... But you probably wouldn't notice that much of a change other than you can watch TV with the lights on, you know.
Well, you've seen the room. It's a windowless room. It's
right.
Been decorated. It has the curtains hanging up for the movie room
yep.
effect.
Yep.
It's perfectly good for watching on the projector.
So, in my opinion, what would be smart for you in that category would either be to go with the newer projector or the short throw projector. Go with a short throw projector with a much larger screen and be obnoxious with it. And you still get the best of both worlds because the short throw sits significantly closer to the screen and you don't have to change your wiring out. Now, traditional projectors look better because the lens is better, but the short throw projector is quite neat in that realm, but you don't really need a problem solving device in your room because you're wired for a traditional projector. Or just there is a projector by JVC now that is a laser projector that's in a cost effect about what your Mitsubishi cost back in the day, which was probably about $1,200 or so back in the day. Yeah. And it's about the same shape, size, fit and finish of your JVC or of your Mitsubishi, but you wouldn't have bulbs anymore. And it would fill that hole quite nicely with 4K technology, and which your Sony receiver you bought 5 years ago or 7 or 8 years ago will do it, because they created 4K, you know, So, but yeah, the only reason that Sony really came out with a new AV receiver line is for 8K. That's the only reason they came out with it, because their stuff could do 4K all along, and Dolby Atmos. They weren't doing Dolby Atmos back then because it wasn't a thing 10 years ago. But yeah, no, that I would probably move you toward the laser category or the TV. The TV category would work as well. So
yeah, the main benefit from that, like you said, is you'd be able to actually have the TV on and have the lights on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the lights on. The laser isn't a perfect, the short throw laser isn't a perfect silver bullet. It still washes out when you turn the lights on. I don't care what they say.
And it's a projection device.
It is a project. It sits on top of a little cabinet, and it just shoots it straight up.
If I went for a TV, I could take my popcorn machine back in there.
True. Yeah, because you shouldn't use yeah, exactly. You shouldn't use popcorn machines in cinema, even though we heavily see them in cinemas all the time. We're like, don't do that. Yeah, no, because over the years of using popcorn, it will turn your screen yellow. So, very much so. Very much so. Well, I think unless you have a technology rebuttal on anything.
I don't know. It was just sitting listening to the one about projection, and I was thinking, you're going on about projection mounts and don't go cheap. Well, I am cheap. So there's my rebuttal. It works fine.
Yes, for those of you that haven't seen Ian's projection mount, it was made out of PVC pipe and I think a piece of 3/4-inch plywood. Is that correct?
Well, MDF.
Or MDF, yeah. So, and it's still up there and it's still working. However, if you are not handy with said Sawzall and plumbing, then I would say just go the cheap route. Do not buy the $100 mount on Amazon. But how much did it cost you to make that mount?
Not very much.
Probably $80.
No, not even that. I mean, two metal plumbing parts and a piece of pipe and just screwed to the ceiling. The MDF screwed to the bottom of it. The wires are hidden down the pipe.
This is why we do not bring Ian for in-home consultation, because he will talk you out of buying things and talk you into building things.
You see, back in the day, it was just a little experiment. There's a media room in this house we bought.
That was before you met Kevin, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where you got your nick. That's where you got your superhero name. Bobby. Bobby Dotson.
Oh, Bobby, yeah.
Bobby Dotson named you a high-tech redneck when he saw your projector mount.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my 70-volt audio switching device.
Yep. Which still I can't figure out how that one works, but
well, there was this big room with no windows that is like, oh, we can use that as an attic, somebody said. And I said, well, isn't it supposed to be a media room? Let's make it a media room. Well, do it if you want. So we did.
True.
But we did it as cheap as possible.
ASAP, as cheap as
ACAP.
ACAP, as cheap as possible. So we do need to have a podcast for called High Tech Redneck. I'm sure there's not. We need to secure that name if it's not secured yet. But now that we just let 600 plus people know about it, probably.
Oh, there's probably already 300 people on Reddit called that.
Probably. Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, because back when we launched our podcast with a non-suitable name that was not copyright, that was copyright, immediately we were like, we need a name, Tony, and then that's where Technology Rocks, ROX, came from.
Well, you just need to come up with a mashup, like something like, with that being redneck.
Yeah. True. Well, ladies and gents, I believe that is your Friday cast. I don't think I have anything else for Saturday. Maybe perhaps we could get Ian in here on a Saturday for our Technology Rocks. Actually, no, this Saturday, T-Bone and I are doing a charity event at for March for Marrow. I forgot about that one. March for Marrow in what the heck park is that called? We're such horrible hosts. What is that park called? The green thing by the water on Hughes Landing. I think it's Hughes Landing Park.
No idea.
That's on Woodlands Parkway. Give me just a second.
Yeah, Lake Woodlands. Yeah, Woodlands Parkway and Lakewood. So, yeah, we're doing a charity event for March for Marrow. So it's going to be a marathon. You will have a much prettier host for that. That will be G from Motive Fitness. And then maybe I'll be on the microphone. Maybe I won't. Who knows? If she's smart, I won't. And Tony and I will be DJing or jukeboxing that assembly. Jukeboxing that assembly with all and all the things. There will be raffles and all funds of things about March for Marrow. March for Marrow is an amazing cause. It's donations that for people that actually need bone marrow, you know, after certain treatments and things. And a lot of times at this event, they get to meet the people that donated and whatnot, and they've never met before and so whatnot. So it's kind of a surreal experience to see these two people meet for the first time. And it's always a tearjerker too for that type of thing. So anyway, Tony and I will be on March for Marrow on Saturday, but we'll be at the shop as well. And then we'll text all high-tech, resident high-tech redneck, and perhaps he'll drive his Mustang once in his life because he needs to, just because he needs to. Anyway, but that's a cast. We'll see in a bit. I'm Justin.
And I'm Tony.
And I'm Ian. So don't forget to stock up on toilet roll and gasoline before the eclipse.
Oh, yeah. When is the eclipse?
On Monday.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. Bread, toilet. What is it? Why is everybody... Okay. So that's not the end of the cast. Why does everybody feel the flipping need to go rush out and buy toilet paper?
Oh.
What about an apocalypse says I can't wipe my butt? Like, why does everybody need to go rush out and get toilet paper?
I don't know, but if you pay attention to things like KPRC Channel 2, they're quoting TikTok users for news, saying that the National Guard are going to be called out and there'll be a shortage of gasoline and there'll be, you know, it's like...
Why?
Because nobody...
It's like Y2K all over again.
Yeah, nobody knows how to do responsible reporting. It's going to go dark for 4 minutes. I mean... Lots of people are going to make their way to be where it goes dark for 4 minutes, but
right,
it's not the end of the world.
Right.
It is not an apocalypse unless some alien spaceship flies in the shadow and steals all the politicians.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If you're a Bible believer, in the Bible, it says, I will come like a thief in the night. Meaning, there will be no warning. There will be no announcement. There will be nothing. I'm just going to be here. So it's not going to be on a calendar. It's not going to be on a date. It's going to be when you're either on the toilet or eating breakfast or shaving or reaching for a pad of paper to load your printer up. That's when he's going to come. And that's the thing is, like, stop panicking. And for God's sake, leave some toilet paper for the rest of us. And what's wrong with the water? See, that's the other thing in the COVID thing. What's wrong with a water hose? I never thought. I mean, I'm resourceful. I'll just use a water hose. It's like, whatever. It's like...
Is it the same one you drink from?
No, I wouldn't drink. I mean, I don't drink from the water. North Shore Park, March for Marrow. Weirdest segue for an event ever. But yeah, please leave some TP for the rest of us. It'll be there on Tuesday or 4 minutes after this apocalypse actually happens. But anyway, that's a cast. I'm Ian. That's Tony. And
it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from Mr. Potter. And we'll see you when we see you. That's a Friday cast. Bye-bye.